can't explain the why, then you have to wonder why you're even doing that feature.
Welcome to Scaling Software Teams, a weekly podcast to help software leaders navigate fast growth without losing the magic that made that growth possible. I'm your host, Wes Winham. Today, I'm joined by Mitch Stewart. Mitch is the co-founder of Guru, a software company based out of Pennsylvania. They recently raised a $25 million round of funding and are actively working to double the size of their engineering team. They help clients like Shopify, Square, and Spotify, all the S's. In this episode, we talk about some of the management practices that have made Mitch successful at Guru. We dive into his transition from developer to manager and how he learned to give away his Legos so his team could build something great. And now, here's my conversation with Mitch Stewart. What's a career inflection point that's kind of led you to where you are today?
So I started at a fairly enterprise, boring software company. It was warehouse management software. And it was handling logistics, inventory, and shipping and stuff like that for some fairly large customers. And at the time, I was, you know, a snarky, sassy software, you know, thinking that I knew everything, and in actuality, I knew nothing. And the systems that I was working with were just so, they were old, right? Because they were intended for a much corporate kind of, you know, older technology base. And this was right, this was 1999, 2000. So all this stuff was happening out there. It was the dot-com era. Things were going bananas in the tech world. I wasn't a part of that. And 10 months into that job, I essentially got fed up with that and wanted to start my own company. And I had an opportunity to join two other people at a company doing essentially UI work for an enterprise piece of software. Now, that company didn't go anywhere. It took us about 2.5 years to realize that the product we were making wasn't very exciting. People didn't really want it. We kind of kept ourselves afloat by doing consulting gigs. But at that point, I realized that working for myself, working for a smaller company, and being able to make decisions, see the impact of those decisions, really solidified in me that this is what I wanted to do. I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I wanted to be involved in a startup at that foundational level, so that then I could be a part of a growing company and just have my hands and brain power basically working on solving the problems for the company. And so that was the first inflection point for me. You know, I really enjoyed that, even though we didn't succeed, because after that, that's when I found Boomi, which did succeed eventually, but I was looking for that other startup after my original one had failed.
I think that sense of impact, immediate impact, is something that draws folks to startups and draws us into management. How did you transition? So you started with two other friends and you were working together. When did you start managing a team of engineers?
So that original startup failed totally. And I was on the hunt for a new job, and I ended up working at a company called Boomi, which is now Dell Boomi. It got bought in 2010. And I had started there as the first software engineer that they had hired. And I worked on that, on actually two different versions of that product, eventually three. But it wasn't until maybe 2 or 3 years into working at Boomi that I transitioned from a software engineer into a manager. And what happened was, in 2006, the co-founder, Rick Nucci, he was the CTO then. He's my current co-founder here at Guru. He was CTO, and we had an idea for Boomi that basically pivoted us out of on-premise software into the cloud version that it is today. And at that time, we were looking at all of the work that had to be done for that. And it was just a massive amount of work. And he gave me the responsibility to build a team around the new product and to hire the next set of people who would report to me to basically build out the product, build out all the architecture, and Rick would step away from the technical aspects of the CTO position and move more into, you know, into that visionary, sales-oriented CTO position. And so that inflection point was another change where I had to start building out a team that would execute on an architecture and on a technical vision that we had. And that was a great experience to have.
So you're building a startup from scratch within a startup, your own team. What was challenging about that?
The biggest challenge was finding those core people that you had to implicitly trust 100%. And I got real lucky in the sense that I was able to find two people who were much better engineers than I was, and they were able to join and really make an impact right away. So the challenge there was just trying to find that initial group of people that you could then build the rest of the team around, right? And we did the same thing at Guru. You know, luckily I had an architect who wanted to join, and then we were able to build the team around him. But we also had to find those additional core people who are still with Guru today that you're able to build a team around. And if you can get that core engineering team with the right culture, with the right mindset, you can do a lot with that. You can really start to build out the rest of the team, start to build out the rest of the engineering processes around a team that is more or less autonomous in nature, and you're just kind of pointing them in the right direction, right? You're giving them the guidance, but they're able to really execute using their skill sets and their talents and their experiences. And it's a lot about just, you know, at the very beginning, you know, making sure the guidance is right, but also letting your team members execute really well.
So you found these two folks that you knew you could build a team around. In the interview, in that whole process, how did you, like, do you remember the moments when you're like, these are the two folks I can build a team around? What evidence did you have about that?
They were both during the phone screens, actually. And I had a phone screen that effectively, you know, went through a lot of just the bare minimum of Java experience, right? It wasn't a crazy phone screen, but the level of detail that they were providing during that phone screen was just, you know, it was beyond anything that any other candidate had ever provided. And then at the same time, we were sharing war stories about previous jobs, right? You know, because the people that I was interviewing, they were senior level people. They had been in my position before. They knew what I was going through in terms of trying to find good people. And we were sharing war stories about that on the phone screen itself. And so it was a combination just gelling with the person, and also just a level of expertise. You know, they were answering questions that I'm not even sure I could have answered properly.
So detail that lets you believe that they had a deep understanding, and then they exemplified their experience with stories or stories of what they've seen and the hiring they've done.
Yeah, exactly.
So now you're kind of up a level of abstraction. You're not leading that one team, you're building teams, and you're managing leaders who are leading teams at Guru. Now that you've gone up another level of abstraction, what is hard? What's hard now that wasn't hard a few years ago?
When you're building the team and you're able to focus on developing the right features for the product, it's very easy to, you know, to work in that single track, right? You're working, you have one roadmap, you have one team, you have one set of designers, one product manager, and you're able to mentally and sequentially put in all of the work that you need to do to, you know, to get a product out the door. And now, and we did this at Boomi, but and we're doing it now at Guru. Now we're splitting the teams, right? And we're creating multiple teams on purpose so that we can, one, create autonomy in those teams such that the product managers, designers, engineering managers, they can work independently so that they can deliver innovative and impactful products to our customers. But the challenge there is I can no longer think about all of the features that go into the product in a sequential manner, right? Everything now is happening in parallel. And there are so many decisions that are being made across the team that it's impossible for one person to hold it in their head at the same time. And so you have to put in the right processes and frameworks in place so that the individual teams feel empowered to make the right decisions given the information that they have. And so a lot of what we're doing today is ensuring that the people running the teams and the people running the products for those teams have the right information, are making decisions that are impactful to the business and impactful to our customers from a, you know, user experience, from a value creation perspective. And it's a challenge because you have to coach people, right? From a single team perspective, I could manage all of that, right? You know, from top to bottom and get everyone aligned as to what we're doing. With this multiple teams, I have to trust the people that we've hired to do that for me as my proxy. And that's a challenge because you have to have really good communication. You have to have really good trust with your, you know, with everyone.
So you've got those two teams, 20-ish total folks, and you're trying to push more context and more communication. What are some tools or habits that you've used to kind of improve that context passing to allow them to make those decisions on what's valuable?
Yeah, it sounds really basic, but surprisingly, a good functional spec, it helps align the team around what it is that you're trying to accomplish. And a functional spec doesn't have to be very detailed, but it does have to outline why you are doing a particular feature. And that's something that I believe really helps engineers get behind a particular piece of code or a particular feature when they understand that what they're doing is impactful to the business as a whole. And when you provide the why, they in turn respond with motivation and excitement and a dedication to completing that feature, whatever that feature may be. And so the functional spec does a really, you know, if you write it correctly and explain not only, okay, yes, you want this button to do A, B, or C, but then you say, okay, this is why we're building this feature in the first place, because of, you know, competitors or customers are asking, or we believe that this feature is innovative in our market and sets us apart from our, you know, from everyone else. And so when you do that, you get a lot more energy around building out a particular feature. And if you can't explain the why, then you have to wonder why you're even doing that feature.
Well, it's a good question. It's a good question to have, and passing it along to the engineers creates some motivation. Have you had any instance where you've passed along the why and gotten some pushback on whether that was the right what to go along with that why?
Yes, and this happens not all the time, but it happens in a way that is productive, right? And you also, as a manager and as an executive, have to create the safe space so that people can do that in a constructive manner as well. Because, you know, software engineers, they're intelligent, they have ideas, they have opinions, They want to be involved in that process as well. And a lot of times, maybe the product manager or the designer may think it a certain feature should be done a certain way, and then the engineer goes, well, if we did it XYZ, we already have all this data, we already have all this feature set, we could actually implement this really easily if we just changed it slightly. And a lot of times those ideas, you wouldn't know about them unless you were knee deep in the code, right? And the same thing happens on the design side as well. Sometimes, you know, requirements come in and a designer say, okay, I see the goals and the why, but I've explored this new approach and how does this look? And all of a sudden you go, wait a minute, like this new approach, it's innovative, it's intuitive. No one's ever thought of it this way. And so again, by having that safe space, you can allow engineers and designers and product managers to really collaborate on what is the best way to implement a feature, right? Because you've talked about the why, you've put the goals in the functional spec, and if the implementation solves those goals, then it can be considered a win, right? It doesn't always have to be dictated by the top.
What's a belief about leading software teams that younger Mitch would have disagreed with?
There was a great article, and forgive me for not knowing the author, but it was about giving away your Legos. And I think that this has gone through the startup world. And it's all about, as you start in your startup career, you know, you're handling everything, right? And you're making all the decisions around architecture and technology and features and so on and so forth. But as you grow, and in order to grow, you have to be willing to give away those responsibilities so that then other team members that you hire can, one, not only grow, but also they can invest and spend more time on those decisions than you could as one person. And as you give that away, and as you empower people to make decisions as best as they are able, then the whole team is then invested into the same goals, the same success criteria that you have for your company. And so younger Mitch probably would not have agreed with that, thinking that, you know, it's better to, you know, grab on everything and do all of the work yourself. Older Mitch is like, okay, no, we can actually separate and give responsibilities to other people and trust them to do it and coach them. So that then everyone gets that level of experience, which in turn gives success to everyone else.
What kind of changed your mind on that? Kind of helped you see the advantages of dispersing those responsibilities? And
I think it was right when I had my inflection point going from engineer to manager. And, you know, at the time, I was really good at getting out a lot of code, right? I don't think it was very good code, possibly sloppy, but it worked, right? And it got us to a certain point, right? Like I was able to, you know, create a wide array of features and stuff. But when I hired the two people into my team, and the level of maturity and experience that they brought made me realize that, yeah, I didn't have all the answers, right? I couldn't do everything, and their level of software engineering was above mine at the time. Well, it still is. I don't code as much, and they were able to just do awesome things with the code base that I didn't think was possible, right? And I was starting to give them things that I thought were really hard, and they would come back with solutions that were elegant, high quality. And it was just an amazing experience to see this happen. And that, you know, that helped me grow, because then I realized that, okay, yeah, you know, can trust people to do a better job than what I would have thought possible. And that just helped me, grow as a manager, because then I learned how to trust. I learned how to delegate and give out tasks and assume that they're, you know, that it's going to come back better than I expected. And so that was a big inflection point for me.
Seeing things come back that are better than we could imagine. That always feels good as a leader. Switching gears to talking a little bit about hiring. So if you had a magic wand and you could spread one idea out into the zeitgeist about hiring that could make it better for our entire industry, what's the idea that you would spread?
The big thing that comes to mind is don't judge a book by its cover. And that has a lot of implications. It has implications on diversity. It has implications on providing opportunities for people who may not have them. It's about, you know, entering into a talent pool that you may not even realize has a lot of talent. And the reason why I say that is because not every good engineer is going to have a computer science background and have worked at, Google or Facebook or, those types of startups. There are great engineers out there who are changing careers, right? They didn't go to school for computer science, but they've learned the skill set either on their own or through boot camps or, just have a passion for technology and are able to grasp it in such a way that they can apply it and just be very successful. And so actually gurus made up, about 50% of them are career changers and they're awesome, right? And I put them up against the other team members who have computer science degrees and no one, even looks at that, right? They're all working together to create an awesome product and they learn off each other. They feed off each other. And it really helps us focus on what's important, which is what can you accomplish, right? It's not where you were, what your education background was. It's what can you accomplish today? What's your passion? Which then fits into our values around, being a good team member, being respectful. I mean, it's all kind of like wrapped into this, not judging a book by its cover, because you never know what you're going to get when you enter into a phone screen or an interview.
Could you tell us a story about one of those great engineers that if you had judged them by their cover, maybe you'd have missed them and what makes them so great?
One of my back end engineers, he actually, it's actually two covers. If I think about it, he was actually at a boot camp down in Delaware that was sponsored by, the big banks down there. And their goal was to have a talent pool of Java engineers because that's what the big banks around here use, Chase and all those companies. They use big banks. Java. And his background, he was actually a psychology major in school. He was a personal fitness trainer as his career and then got into this boot camp. And I would have never have thought that he just knew. He just knew what he wanted to do. He had a passion for technology. And, after the first interview, I knew he was someone that had to work at Guru. And he was a very early employee. And he's still here today. And he is just an awesome person to have on the team. Just passionate about not only what he's doing technically, but also very passionate about the people around him, ensuring that everyone is included and is learning and is just, a big part of the team. And so I had to get by the fact that he was in a boot camp for banks and then his background was not in tech at all.
I think personal training, like being a coach, being a motivator, understanding how to help people accomplish their goals, that seems very applicable to a lot of software to me. That's an awesome story.
Scaling Software Teams is brought to you by my startup, Woven. In our interview, Mitch told us that the biggest idea he wants to spread throughout the developer hiring zeitgeist is don't judge a book by its cover. And at Woven, we agree. Woven is a developer screening tool that reduces bias and noise in software hiring. We empower hiring managers with a detailed assessment of every candidate based on an hour-long work simulation. Our clients make decisions about who they want to spend time with based on ability to do the job, not just a resume. If you want to learn more about how Woven could help you scale your software team, check us out at woventeams.com. So now it's time for the rapid fire round. I'll ask questions and you'll give us your quick reaction. Ready?
Okay.
Let's do it. What's the most impressive thing a candidate has done in an interview that helped you realize they were a good fit?
Sent very thoughtful thank you notes after the interview.
If I were interviewing for a job on your team or one of your teams, what could I do to stand out?
Come prepared with knowledge of the company and why you want to work at Guru.
What's a mistake you've seen an engineering candidate make in an interview that they didn't realize they were making?
Trying to appear too smart and answer every single question as opposed to admitting that they didn't know.
What does a 6-star culture ad look like for your team?
Someone who doesn't take themselves too seriously and enjoys working with others and raising everyone else's bars.
My guest today has been Mitch Stewart. Mitch, thank you for being on Scaling Software Teams.
Thank you very much.
Thanks again to Mitch for sharing his experience with us. Here are a few takeaways I had from our chat with Mitch. Number one, explain the why behind every feature. As leaders, it's our responsibility to build and inspire teams to solve real, tangible business problems for our customers. Our engineering teams are the best source of innovative solutions. If we say, we need this button to do X, we'll get that. If we paint the desire, maybe they find a way to eliminate that button entirely. That's better for our customers. Number two, give away your Legos. When Mitch transitioned from an individual contributor to a manager, he learned that he had limitations. Time. If his team was going to be successful, he had to hand key projects over to his teammates and trust that they were up to the task. He had to give away his favorite toys. The result? Everyone got more involved and more bought in. Better results. Number three, don't judge a book by its cover. Finally, Mitch hit close to home when he told us not to judge every engineering candidate based on their resume. Not every great engineer will have a computer science background or go to the right school. In fact, at Guru, half of their engineering team is comprised of career switchers with great collaboration skills. As someone who is passionate about helping companies reduce credentials bias in their hiring, I found this inspiring. Half, that's a great number. Thank you so much to Mitch for joining us today. I had a blast hearing from him, and now I want to hear from you. Please leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. I'd love your feedback. How can we make this show better? Those reviews will also help others find the show. Thanks, and I'll talk to you next week.